Hey gang, welcome to PWT Talks NXT. This is one of those relatively uneventful post-takeover shows. Just two matches, good to very good matches, but just two matches. Lots of recap stuff that we probably won't have to cover in a lot of detail. Tom wasn't here for the roundtable, so he might weigh in a little bit on that. Harley's got a few stats for you, so let's not bury the lead. I should probably introduce these guys first. And myself, I'm Kelly Wells. I write the NXT Tracker on Pro Wrestling Torch. I did one on Lacey Evans about 8 days ago, and still deciding who the next one's going to be. Might just do an overall state of booking thing, which I used to do before every takeover, and I've skipped one or two, but this one, I don't know. The lead into this last takeover was a little bit iffy for me, other than the main event, which of course was ruined by an injury, but what are you going to do? So, yeah, that's me. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. Let's say hi to Harley R. Paget.
That's me. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I co-host the Tuesday live cast, Talking Honor, as well as the VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, where we go back and rewatch old episodes of the Young Bucks YouTube series, Being the Elite. And kind of breaking news, I guess. So this is going to be my last episode of NXT, PWT Talks NXT, for a short while, as starting next week, I'm going to be doing a Mae Young Classic podcast, which is exciting, and with Mae Young Classic airing Wednesdays at 9 o'clock, same time we record this show, kind of difficult to balance both. So I'm going to step away from this show for a little while. You can have Kelly, Justin, and Tom for the next month or two, and I'm really looking forward to doing the Mae Young Classic podcast. I've got two first-time Pro Wrestling Torch podcasters joining me, Bridget Clark, a librarian out of Pennsylvania, and Kat Moore, a wrestler in training out of Florida. So the three of us are going to be talking about the Mae Young Classic in its entirety.
You know, I would have loved to be involved, but having a couple of females on the show is probably a good idea for the Mae Young Classic. So I'm very excited to hear that. Less excited for me and Tom, because we're going to get as much Justin as we can handle. But what are you going to do? And he'll never hear this. So, you know, it doesn't matter. I can say what I want about him. So let's heel on Justin this week. That's what we're going to do. Tom Staub, go ahead and say hi.
At Tom Staub on Twitter, and I cover the NXT tapings for PW Torch. They've been asking people to put away their phones lately for live tweeting, so we'll see how thorough my report can be. I'm pretty confident I can get you guys a full one tomorrow. So if you're one of those dirty, dirty people that likes to look at spoilers, I'm your guy.
I don't like to look at spoilers, but all the same, I'm desperate to see this Undisputed Era versus Ricochet Pete Dunne match. Very excited about that, but we'll get there. So, all right, we had two matches this week, one for the UK title and one in the women's division. So let's just go ahead and start with the main event, Pete Dunne versus Zach Gibson. After about 6 or 7 minutes of this match, I was like, this is, you know, it's okay, but it's clear they're kind of holding back. And, of course, there's like 10 or 12 more minutes left in the match, and they kind of kick it into a higher gear, and they get it into that very classic British strong style, very mean, very sick looking at times. For me, just a feast. I love this stuff. Zach is cruel in all the ways Pete Dunne was cruel. And Pete Dunne's still cruel-ish, but he's kind of been forced into that anti-hero role just because he's one of those guys who's just so good at his job that people want to cheer him. Just a savant, just a natural. But yeah, this Pete Dunne versus Zach Gibson, a foregone conclusion. I guess that kind of, I don't know if it hurt it for me, but I was never at any point really falling for any near falls here. I just did not believe at all that the title could change hands, which is the only thing I would really ding this for. Otherwise, a really, really very good TV match, and better than I expected, given that these were the lead in to the NXT takeover show. Harley, how did this main event grab you?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Like, great match overall, but definitely knowing without a shadow of a doubt that Pete was walking out the champion, hard to get too invested in too many of the near falls, but they did it. I mean, considering that, they did a marvelous job of getting me engaged, because on our last episode, I couldn't remember his name. I was like, it's something Gibson, Jack Gibson. I couldn't even remember the guy's name. And I watched the entire UK tournament this year. Right. That was the other thing. When they did the video package and introducing him as the winner of the UK tournament, I went, oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that thing. I forgot to watch that tournament, and I forgot who won. And I don't know what that says. But so, yeah, I came away interested in him. I assume he's going to be a part of NXT UK, and I assume we're going to find out. We don't have an air date for that yet, do we?
Yeah, it just always says coming soon. That's all it says.
Yeah, but they recorded like 8 episodes.
Yeah, they've filmed some, but I mean, maybe they got to figure that out. They don't want to film 8 episodes and then find out that they don't have any more in the can. So I don't know what's going to happen there.
They have another taping scheduled with some matches announced already. They've got a tournament for the women's championship over there. I believe that's happening next month.
Yeah.
I thought it was this weekend.
They've tweeted a few things with pictures of all the women that are in the tournament as well.
Yeah, I saw
at least
something
seven
about
seven of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw like the headline NXT UK Women's Champion to be crowned this weekend.
Yep. Looks like Toni Storm is going to be like.
Right. Yeah, she's clearly front and center building around her. They've got Dakota Kai, Rhea Ripley, Killer Kelly, and at least three others.
Yep.
I think I saw Zaya Brookside in there even.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Or there's like a really young looking girl with purple hair. So if it's not Zaya, I'm not sure who it is.
Right. So Toni Storm either going to win that tournament or probably going to be the thorn in the side of whoever does, I would assume. It's the way they're kind of positioning it. So who knows? I'm looking forward to that as well. I'll watch any tournament. I will watch absolutely any tournament. I'll watch a checkers tournament. I don't know. Maybe not. But, tournaments. I like them. So, Tom, on this main event.
Pete Dunne, I'm just relishing every opportunity to watch him wrestle these days. They're doing a very good job of keeping him fresh. He's far from overexposed. And he's just proven himself to be such a special performer. And on nights like tonight, we see, like you said, he's sort of been forced into, it doesn't even feel like anti-hero anymore. It basically feels like he's just a full-on babyface now. And you sort of wonder, like, well, how can you get sympathy on a guy like that? And he does it. I mean, I know it was a foregone conclusion today, but just the look on his face, and when Gibson had him in that submission hold that he broke with his teeth, in particular, Dunn was just doing a really great job of garnering sympathy, I felt. So he works on both sides of the coin, and he just seems to be doing awesome work in the UK indies that WWE is affiliated with, and he's doing some intergender stuff as well. I think that, you know, when we hear Mauro Ranallo say something like, oh, well, Triple H himself said that he'll be a future WWE champion, that's not just a line. Pete Dunne is definitely a special performer. So I enjoyed it very much. And, you know, my questions going off of our talk about UK NXT is exactly how rosters are going to be handled. Even just talking about the women's tournament, we've got Rhea Ripley and Dakota Kai. So does that mean they are NXT UK exclusive now? Does that mean they're working both brands? When they do build to a big match, is that big match just going to happen on the tapings? Or is that going to happen at the takeovers? Or are they going to get their own special? So there are a lot of questions still up in the air there.
Yeah.
And I assume Dunn was gone from Florida. I thought he was UK bound permanently.
I kind of did, too. A little surprising that not only is he in this tag match, but he's also eyeballing Ricochet's title.
Right. And that could be, you know, doing a couple jobs on the way out, as it were, to the new territory again, as it were. I don't know. It's strange that they still feel the need to do that, do the job on the way out. I know that's how it's done, but it's not like these guys are going to different companies or anything like that. So I thought maybe it was that, because if he relatively soon goes for Ricochet's title, he's going to lose that match, and which would be the very, very rare loss for Pete Dunne, who still hasn't lost on NXT.
11-0 on NXT.
Right. So
best record in company history.
He's only lost. He's only ever lost on the tournament, the original tournament. Yeah. So, yeah, and that, you know, 11 wins, that really shows you that he's not overexposed. That's these are New Japan numbers, 11 defenses or 11 matches in that 400 days. So that's what. I don't know. I really love Pete Dunne. I knew he was special right away. He was playing that role in the tournament of the heel, the two-day tournament that they did. I loved what he did, attacking Sam Gradwell, his first opponent for the next day when he had an opening. Just everything he's done is just so natural. And then today, as far as Tom talking about how he seems like he's a full-on babyface and garnering sympathy, I go to the moment where just organically – his mouthpiece was kicked out of his mouth, and he made a big production of slowly reaching for the mouthpiece because he knew that Zach could benefit and gain heat by stepping on his hand. And so, like, he reaches for it and makes a big production of it in what looked like at least an improvised moment. And if it wasn't, it was just really well done regardless. So either way, I want to call out this great moment. But I love the fact that he reached out for it, and then they had Zach just, like, It's just such a cruel heel looking thing to really stomp on somebody like that when they're down. So yeah, I feel like Dunne is going to be fine in whatever role they find him in. He looks like such a heel, but if he's this organically and realistically cool, babyface might be what's really in his future, but I guess we'll see. So Dunne versus Gibson, an awesome TV main event that I just didn't know that we would get, because sometimes it seems like they're holding back on these post takeover episodes. We did have one other match that was Deonna Purrazzo versus Bianca Belair, so we'll just go ahead and do that match before we start barreling into our emails and such. But Deonna Purrazzo has been not so successful on NXT TV in her history, but in Ring of Honor, which I watch sometimes and Harley watches all the times, she did very well. She was definitely one of the centerpieces of the women's division there. Never got to be champion because they're still on their first championship reign, but yeah, never got to be champion there. But Deonna Purrazzo versus Bianca Belair, nice little match, short-ish, an interesting I thought it was odd that they brought back Deonna in a match like this instead of having her defeat an enhancement talent. But maybe working with Bianca and having this kind of match was good for her. I don't know. Harley, anything on that? And if you have any Ring of Honor notes on Deonna and the way she's come along in the last year or so, that'd be great too.
Yeah, she was definitely positioned as arguably the number one babyface in the Women of Honor division over in ROH. She had a long, year and a half long feud with Kelly Klein. She's in a romantic relationship with the villain Marty Scurll, and he moved to Florida with her when she signed with NXT. So I definitely think she's going to be big things in NXT eventually. And on the one hand, it is weird for her reintroduction here to be, you know, a loss after she appeared in the past in NXT as enhancement talent periodically. And now she's back, and then she loses her first match again. She loses her first match 2 weeks before she enters the Mae Young Classic. Seems kind of weird. But that it almost seems to be the tradition for the women's division. I mean, how many times has Dakota Kai and Candice LeRae and Lacey Evans lost this year alone, right?
Right.
I think Candice lost her first match even once she finally got out from Johnny Shadow. So yeah, I don't think long-term it's really going to hurt her too much. She got the full presentation. She, you know, she got her own gear. She got the big entrance with the Videotron. She has her jacket with the Virtuosa on it. And she got to wrestle it in Brooklyn in front of a takeover crowd. That's, you know, I don't think Lacey can say that. I don't even think Dakota or half the women on the roster can say they wrestled in front of a crowd that big for NXT. So there's definitely a reason they put her out there as opposed to Aliyah again or some unnamed enhancement talents.
Right.
And yeah, I think they'll definitely come back to that. That said, she does have the worst women's record in NXT history.
You got that list sitting in front of you, or is that what you were gonna do?
Sure, if you want, before, or unless you want to throw to Tom first and come back to me.
Sure, yeah. You find that, and Tom, go ahead on this opening match.
Yeah, I mean, not too much to add. It was fun to see Bianca back. The re-debut, reintroduction of Deonna Purrazzo doesn't bother me. I was expecting to be a little bit more excited about seeing her at first, and I'm not sure what to make of her yet, and that's taking into account that I saw what she has done at this year's Mae Young Classic as well, so far. And, you know, I'm still just sort of figuring out where she's going to figure in. However, I think it's of note that she has already, since re-signing, been on the tours, the outside of Florida tours with NXT. And, I mean, obviously she was given this spot too. So I think that while on both sides of the match here, Bianca is obviously going to be a major part of the women's division, presumably at least for another year here. Deonna could become a mainstay, if not a title contender.
Yeah, for sure.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
It's funny that before her enhancement losses were basically just because they didn't have anything for her. They weren't planning anything for her. She got a little bit of TV time. She got minutes here and there. And now this one, she was literally given the match because she was deemed important enough to get it. I assume, I mean, obviously, but this was nice, and they didn't, you know, they got room to do more matches, these two, if they want to do them down the road. I assume that we will see these two go at it at least once or twice more. I can't imagine how their paths don't cross again with a relatively small 10-person, 12-person division or whatever they've got. But yeah, it was a perfectly cromulent opener with Bianca moving on towards probably going to be one of those, I don't know about the first challenger, but yeah, she'll be in the mix not long from now. A couple other things that I wanted to call out from the show, Velveteen and EC3, they did their little recap first, then a little note on the Triple H talk with after NXT, like the press conference. He said that he did not know that Velveteen Dream was going to do those tights with the Call Me Up Vince. He didn't know, and that he kind of wished he did, and he made a joke about it, and he said, yeah, when you do that kind of thing, there are two different kinds of calls you can get, and one of them is a good call, and one of them is a not-so-good call. But yeah, he, for whatever it's worth, and, you know, these guys play around with kayfabe all the time, but Triple H usually plays those press conferences straight. And for whatever it's worth, he said that he didn't know about that beforehand. So last week when we said there was no way he didn't know, apparently there's a way he didn't know. So
that,
there you go.
That seems far-fetched.
It seems like the kind of thing that they would...
The way WWE is micromanaged?
I know.
How do you even get the tights made without Hunter knowing?
Well, I think they got their people. But I don't know. We don't know a lot about Patrick Clark, the man. We have no idea if he's got that kind of audacity. But you're right. I still think last week what we thought of Occam's Razor says there's no way he didn't know. But it just it was the backdrop of where Triple H was saying it in this press conference, where normally he's just kind of answering straightforward questions and getting angry about people saying, how does this compare to the Ring of Honor slash, or what does he think of the Ring of Honor slash New Japan show selling out, and everything like that. But anyway, that all led into the Dream interview, followed by the EC3 interview, which I literally was just starting to say this. I was starting to write out, this isn't such a bad interview. And then he goes on to his win after win after win. And it went on for so long that I think it went into self-parody. I couldn't believe how long he did that. And then he went off on Lars in a feud that I'm sure will set the world ablaze, EC3 versus Lars Sullivan. And then he made just a quick out of nowhere comment about Kaiser Soze, which I don't know. He tried something. It was okay. I thought it was odd that they have wrestlers getting out the information about this whodunit. So clearly they're very, very committed to this whodunit, since they even used this week to advance it. They showed that Nikki Cross was at the site of the Aleister attack in the grainiest video ever. It's like, how can you make that claim? But then they also had EC3. I think they put EC3 in a weird position to have to be giving information about this whodunit, which is a story he's probably not even involved in, I would assume. But with that, I'm just going to go into the whole whodunit saga. Is it working for you? How do you feel about it? Tom, what do you think?
I think, even though I'm not excited about EC3 Lars Sullivan and coming off of TakeOver, I think I'm finally convinced that there's just absolutely nothing EC3 can do to get me on his bandwagon. I think it's an interesting way to start a feud. Like, gosh, this is such a weird comparison that's only just coming to me as I'm talking. The SmackDown top 10 list that they tried last year, it was terrible. And it seemed like it was just going to be this one episode thing. And they actually got a feud out of it. Now, the feud was also terrible. But I think it's interesting that it's something that sort of they had to do it for a certain reason. In my opinion, they did a really good job of it at the last second. And now they're looking to see what else they can mine out of it. Rather than it just being about Aleister and whoever the assailant was. So I think that's at least interesting. Do I need to know that they saw Nikki Cross standing on the roof? Probably not, but I guess it lends credence to Regal's investigation. Every time they give an update on it, it reminds me of...
We get into it a little more.
It just seems like he's being really thorough. It reminds us of every time we tune into the news and get like the tiniest little itty bitty nugget that probably isn't really going to amount to anything in this ongoing Robert Mueller investigation. It reminds me of that every time they bring it up. So I think it at least, if every little bit of information we get is not important, it at least makes the important stuff we will end up learning seem more valid.
Right. Next week we'll find out Montez Ford bought new gloves that day. Gloves for punching somebody.
He's going to say they didn't fit, can't get them on, and that's going to be that.
Oh, no.
Do you think they'd have the – you know what? Vince would do that. Vince would do that in 2018, but they did the white Ford Bronco. But I don't think Triple H would do that. I just don't get that feeling. I'm kind of into it. I like a tiny bit of mystery theater every now and then. So I'm having fun with it. I don't know. I still don't know if I get the idea that they know exactly who it's going to be. And I don't know if that has to be a big deal. They can write out a few people and say that it wasn't them. And then, you know, it's wrestling. So later on, if they were like, we kind of need it to be Adam Cole, they can figure out a way it was Adam Cole. They can do whatever they want, which is kind of like why I don't fully get into these mysteries. Because when you're watching a mystery movie, you know that they wrote it from the end and worked backwards. With this, they don't write it from the end. They just start writing and they're like, you know what? We'll friggin' think of something. So it doesn't matter. So you don't know whether you're in good hands.
So how might this plausibly end? What kind of ending could there be to this that would make sense, or like wouldn't feel really cheesy and tacked on? Do we have the person who did it comes out to the ring and they eventually confess and they say it was me? Or is there a wrestler who has video footage on their phone right now. They saw the whole thing, they recorded it, and they've just been silent this whole time for whatever reason. They've been, they're afraid for their safety. You know, it could be a referee or somebody like somebody weaker in that sense. And then finally,
or they were paid hush money, so they can roll it out slowly like that.
And then they finally reach the point where they're like, I can't be silent anymore. I have the footage. It was this guy. Like, what? I don't know. What kind of ending could this have that would satisfy you guys?
I'm half expecting Pentagon Jr. to show up and say, oh, I was signing my contract and I wanted to make a statement right off the bat, or, you know, something crazy, kind of playing into what Kelly was saying, that maybe they don't know who it is yet and they'll pick somebody that wasn't even in the footage.
Yeah. I don't know. Whenever these happen and things like this happen, I watched so much wrestling in the Attitude Era. I'm just, part of me is just like, God, I hope it's not Regal. Like, that's the kind of thing that comes to my head.
I thought about whether it would be Alistair faking it and you know, being his own attacker, but that just doesn't make sense, because why would he take himself out of the title match?
His twin brother, Alistair White.
I thought that it might be Gargano, but I felt like if it was going to be Gargano, that would have been maybe rolled out at the takeover match, but maybe this way they have their cake and eat it too. So they get the takeover match, they have their big moment there, and then Aleister Black or whoever can point out it was Johnny Gargano and he's way over the deep end or whatever it is. I mean, the real disappointing ones at this point, it would be disappointing if it was somebody like Lars. It would be disappointing if it was Ciampa, just because.
What about Kona Reeves?
Oh, that would be fantastic. I would love it if it was Kona Reeves. I would be so into that, especially with the way they just made him so aloof. Like, he just didn't care in that video. That would make me happy. I would laugh at it anyway, but I would. There's no way they gave this time to it for it to be somebody at that level. So this is either going to be somebody that's established or somebody that they're really, really going to push near the top right away. Matt Riddle is a natural babyface kind of guy, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Keith Lee's a natural babyface. Who else do you have waiting in the wings? I mean, this seems like
a setup for a heel turn.
Yeah.
A babyface we already know and love. How could they do something so despicable?
Well, that's what keeps making me go back to Cassius. But do they want Cassius that high in on the list? Because Cassius has been jobbing for the most part for a really long time. Now we know he's really good. Like, we know he can really work a good stiff match. They just haven't used him as a high level guy. I don't know that he's ever been on TakeOver. He was going to be in an 8-man tag that got shoved out or something like that. Maybe one or two.
I think he lost to, like, Lars on a TakeOver or something.
Oh, yeah, that's right. An opening match against Lars Sullivan. Yeah.
And Velveteen Dream.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was on. And I can't remember if he was in that 8-man tag or not. Somebody got pushed out of the 8-man tag. It was either him for No Way Jose. Yeah,
Jose
okay.
got bumped.
All right. Four Cassius. That's what it was. And then they lost anyway to Sanity. So,
all right.
So, yeah, that's, it seems like story-wise, that makes the most sense. And that's what they could do the most with. And if
and what
Cassius was
someone
younger,
from enhancement to main eventer.
Right. And if Cassius was younger, I'd say that this was a lock. But he's not younger, and I don't know how long they're going to use him. But if they're going to use him at all, I feel like NXT is just where they're going to use him. So I don't know. I guess he's my pick, too. And I would be relatively satisfied with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be a welcome development.
Yeah.
So does it have to get paid off before the next takeover?
I guess I assume that the payoff will lead into the next takeover. But with the next takeover being War Games, you can have all these guys tied up with something else and maybe pay it off at the end of War Games. Who knows how silly they'll get. They'll say, we've got it narrowed down to the nine guys that are in War Games. And then you find out at the end of the match. I don't know. This could be used to set that up. Or they could drag this. Oh, there's no way they drag this all the way to Royal Rumble. Is there? Yeah. I guess that depends on the length of the injury. Right. The landscape changes and who knows what's going to happen. And that's when audibles have to be called. Yeah, I think that this will probably be paid off by War Games or at War Games. Something like that. And it'll be the gobbledygooker. That's what I'm calling gobbledygooker. So there you go. On that match, or not match, but that set of developments, we should probably get to some emails. We got five of them this week, and they're kind of all over the place. So I'll just do them in any old order I deem satisfactory.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start with JT Grizzle. JT Grizzle, if that is your real name. Hi, guys. My last two emails have been pretty long, so here's a shorter one for you. Who do you see as Ciampa's next challenger for the title, assuming we're not getting Gargano again for a while? I can really only see it being Velveteen unless they decide to do something interesting with Cassius Ohno or Hotshot Riddle right to the main event. Also, what do you see as being for Gargano next for Gargano, and do you see him becoming NXT champion eventually? And who would you like to see Matt Riddle's first feud be? Thanks for the great work, fellas. JT. So we've kind of talked about who we might think. We talked about this Saturday. We talked about who the next challenger for Ciampa might be. And we talked maybe a tiny bit about Dream. We all kind of thought that EC3 might be in that mix. It wouldn't be overly shocking, but I would have thought so more so if he had won that match. And now that we see him maybe transitioning to Lars, maybe not right away. I don't think this feud is over. I really don't. I think that this feud goes until Gargano wins. That is what I believe will happen. Whether that happens in a match between these two or whether it happens in a triple threat match. The correct ending story-wise for this, just from a narrative standpoint, would be for it to be in a one-on-one match. But it just feels like there's this little groundswell and people getting a little frustrated with the fact that these one-on-one matches keep happening. And for me, I don't know. The only thing I worry about with a feud that goes on this long is that the company literally doesn't know how to transition away from it. They don't know what to do with the guys otherwise, and that's got to be a question for them too. You've really got to, when you rip the Band-Aid off, get them into another feud right away, whether it's with Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, these new guys, or anybody, and just get them in as different a feud as possible, just so you don't have to work them with each other for forever. Whenever this feud actually ends, I believe one of them needs to go up so they don't have to. So it's not even hanging over our heads as an option. Tom, what do you think here?
Yeah, we've seen Keith Lee work one enhancement match. And while that would be my prediction for Matt Riddle's entrance, it just seems like it would be too much of a mirror of what they already have Keith Lee doing. So I'm extremely curious where they're going to slot him in. I would be shocked if they threw him right into that main event scene, although I would not argue with it. The guy's really, really good. And like you said, he's a natural babyface. I think the crowd would take to him right away as somebody to step up to Ciampa. I, as much as I've been a proponent of this feud, despite how long it is, and in part because of how long it is, I like how well that they've told the story, just to say that in brief. I think that even though we heard Triple H say that the finish had to be adjusted a little bit because the Johnny Gargano's knee dislocation is legitimate, apparently, watching the finish, I loved the finish because I thought it told me, all right, Gargano now has to take some time off. He can't feud with Ciampa. Ciampa's reign of terror over NXT is going to continue, and it's going to extend beyond Gargano and Black. And we'll get maybe two takeovers away from it. And it's a cyclically poetic or poetically cyclical, rather, where, you know, Gargano was on NXT by himself for a while after Ciampa turned on him. Ciampa came back at Philadelphia, I believe it was. Yeah, Philadelphia. And this year, or 2019, we could get the same thing where Ciampa is now left to his own devices, in this case as champion, on a winning streak as opposed to a losing streak like Gargano was. But then Gargano could return after whatever Ciampa's match is at Philadelphia. And, you know, now he's back to save the day after we've had to suffer through Ciampa as our champion for so long. And it hopefully would feel fresh again at that point. So whether they got there due to necessity or by design, and there's the question of, you know, Gargano did, we agreed, look like the most suspicious, or, you know, at least one of the most suspicious people in the whodunit. Maybe they were planning on going to Gargano Black next. I don't know. But that's where I see that part of it going. As far as who is Ciampa's next challenger, I agree with JT that Velveteen seems to be the guy. Like, I almost don't know who else it could be other than Velveteen, which is kind of funny to say after, you know, I wished and washed back and forth after making the official predictions on last week's show, but I was surprised that I got all of my takeover predictions correct, except for the one that I said was a 100% lock. Velveteen Dream was absolutely going to lose, and EC3 was probably going to be the next challenger. But that match result flipped how I was thinking about that.
And Dream certainly has earned this kind of title shot, this kind of spot. Like, everything he's done has been so good. He's just not been in the right place at the right time, not feuding with the right kind of opponent at the right time. It really, they could have that match, Dream and Ciampa, and while that can feel a little bit transitional, it wouldn't be the main event of War Games, because the main event of War Games will be War Games, I assume. So, yeah, lots of different ways they can go. Harley, anything to add there?
So, Takeover War Games 2, our next Takeover, November 17th, almost 3 months. My gut says it's Ciampa and Black at War Games. I don't know how bad Black's injury is, but I think 3 months should be probably enough time for him to get back healthy. And I think it's something as simple as he comes back and Black's convinced that it was Ciampa who attacked him, because why wouldn't he? That's exactly the kind of thing Ciampa would do. And Black gets a rematch and we set up that singles match for the title. I think Gargano has to disappear for at least through to them to then. Maybe he can return in December, but I think Gargano needs to just go off TV completely and kind of slowly stop talking about him, to the extent where we almost forget about him before Gargano finally returns and picks up with Ciampa again. That said, yeah, November 17th, almost 3 months away, so I wouldn't be surprised if Ciampa gets an interim feud until Black's healthy, until he gets back, for like a month and a half or so. And it could be Velveteen Dream. I don't know. It's tough because NXT rarely does turns, like heel turns, face turns. You know, 2 months ago, I was like, oh, it's going to be Bianca and Shayna Baszler for the title. They're definitely going to turn Bianca. They didn't. Saturday on the show, I said, Undisputed Era, I think they're turning face. They really booked like baby faces tonight. The fans love them. I think they're going to do that. And then coming out of this tonight's episode, I'm back on, no, that's not going to happen. They're staying heel. So
yeah,
Yeah, I don't know if, as much as fans love Velveteen, I think Hunter intends for Dream to stay on the heel side of things. And
it's a developmental territory.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's because it's a developmental territory and he just wants to be like, we've got to nail this before we start trying anything else.
Yeah, we want to figure out 100% Velveteen Dream the heel before we get into anything else. And the fans are cheering you. So maybe there is still room to work there and to figure out how to get you over as a heel sort of thing. I don't know. I want to say I'm going with Dream versus Keith Lee at TakeOver.
All right. Wow. That seems like a very much Velveteen Dream sort of TakeOver match. That's for sure.
Yeah. Next month, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Next email was from Jeff. Hi, guys. Thank you for the terrific roundtable post-takeover. I was taking a couple of days to digest for a couple of questions I had. With Gargano and Ciampa, while we keep getting the top-notch matches, it does ask, where are we going next? How much further can this go? I enjoy feuds and matches like this, but it feels like this is pushing the limits of an expiration date. My wife, a huge Johnny fan, asked the same thing. How much longer are they going to fight? Does someone need to jump off a building? If this ended with a three stages of hell match, that's great, but it seems this is an endless feud. What do you all think? Thanks, everyone. Keep up the great work. Yeah, obviously kind of covered. But otherwise, I think we kind of talked about what other stipulation seems like it's worthy of this at this point. For me, actually simplifying and doing something like an Iron Man match might make sense, because you know these guys want to fight forever anyway. So I just have a sickness for Iron Man matches. I absolutely adore them. I know kind of the blueprint, how they go and everything like that, but I get into them anyway, and watching the clock and seeing how it goes, I get into them in a way that I shouldn't, given how well I know how they're crafted. So, but yeah, I could see an Iron Man match here if they were going to pay it off that way. Otherwise, I believe that the payoff was meant to be this three-way match with Aleister Black, and then maybe after that they would have done one more one-on-one. Quickly, is there any other – I know we talked about a strap match. I kind of like those two. They're a guilty pleasure of mine. Any other match types that these guys can do?
Three Stages of Hell really is one of my favorite stipulations, and I forget which one of us originally brought it up, but I would love to see it come to that. And with Triple H overseeing the whole thing, I'm pretty sure, like, out of the four or five Three Stages of Hell matches there have been, Triple H has either been in all of them or – maybe mm-hmm. he only missed one of them.
He is who I think of when I think of that match.
Yeah,
he's the
absolutely.
Only person I think of.
So for the longest time, I said that my favorite match, and I just it's not the kind of thing that I've really thought about recently, but for the longest time, my favorite match was Triple H Stone Cold in that Three Stages of Hell match, just because I was so invested in that feud. One of my favorite wrestling memories. So I would love to see it come to that. It feels like it might be a little bit of a fantasy. The other thing that comes to mind is honestly, like, right off the bat, you know, with the exception of the CWC, when these guys have wrestled each other, it's always been with some sort of extreme rule stipulation. Just get that all out of there and let them have a regular match with one another.
Yep. Harley, any others to add on, or have we exhausted the well? Have we tapped it?
How can any match end this at this point, right? Ciampa beats Gargano.
If the others didn't, then why would – yeah.
Yeah, no matter who wins, the other guy won't leave it alone, right? Gargano beats Ciampa for the title, fair and square, in the ring, clean. You know a week later, Ciampa's coming out and jumping him from behind and saying, I'm getting my title back, and vice versa.
Right, so, because they started with loser leave town, so you can't really go back to that.
Yeah, so the only way the only ending to this that really makes any logical sense to me is either somehow, some way they become friends again, or Regal just has enough and banishes one of them.
I have considered the friends again idea.
Gargano.
Just because I was like, I don't know how else they can end this. I've actually
so
thought about that.
That he aligns with Ciampa.
Mm-hmm.
Two-man power trip.
The two of them against Black and somebody else. Black blames Gargano for attacking him, even though Gargano insists it wasn't him. and everybody convinced that it was Gargano just pushes him over the edge.
Right.
You guys that would think be that wild
little,
to see.
You guys think that that little of me, you think I would do this sort of thing after everything I've gone through? And then Ciampa is there to be the devil on his shoulder.
Right.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right. So, moving on from those guys, we got an email from Charles Harkins. Is it me, or does Triple H's take on big guys differ from Vince's? Dan Matha, Marcel Bartel, Chris Dijak, Moss, and Sabatelli are all Vince's type of guys, but are used in as enhancement talents in NXT. Triple H seems to be more into guys who are top-tier wrestlers that can cut fairly manageable promos. Do you think that Tyler Breeze, Emma's, and Bo Dallas's gimmicks that were popular in NXT not going over on the main roster made Vince decide to put the main roster stamp on the others that followed? Do you see how worked Triple H got at the post-NXT press conference when someone questioned if the NXT TakeOver WrestleMania show can match the New Japan / ROH show? Never heard him that animated. Thoughts? Also, what is the resident NXT correspondent's take on Mae Young Classic 2, who stole his heart? Thanks again for being my number one source for NXT coverage and analysis. And then he gave us the high five emoji. Okay, so... yes, they do think of who these guys think of top tier workers is definitely different, which is odd because Triple H benefited from Vince's view of who should be a major superstar. Triple H was a guy with a ripped body, large, with a full head of hair. That was the big thing at the time. Very long and very well-kept hair. And he also fell in love with Vince's daughter. So there was that too. But yeah, it's funny that Triple H was such a beneficiary of that. And yet he definitely saw Trips is close with Shawn Michaels. So obviously that's part of it. So, he got to be up close with and learn from one of the best of all time, maybe just the best of all time. It's certainly right there. But yeah, it's interesting how differently these guys think and how the ways that can clash, because Triple H can only do so much to change the culture when he is consistently the feeder system here. And he even talked at that NXT press conference about how maybe NXT becomes less you don't think of it as a demotion. Maybe you think of it about just trading one to the other. Somebody from what is currently known as the main roster goes to NXT for a while and they do something different. And that way they're able to rest, hang out in Florida for a few months, and take some time off the road. And that's what they're doing for a while. And I just think I thought of this a few months ago and I never brought it up on the show because where would I bring it up on the show? But I thought of that as a double-edged sword for NXT, because the hunger of these young wrestlers is so much of what makes it work, I think. But it's also just a well-crafted show, and I feel like everybody on the roster deserves to be part of such a well-crafted show because the talent they have on the main roster is through the roof. There's just so many people not being used in ways that are helping them get or stay over. So, I hate to spend that much time on your first question, but I think that this is a really good question. And I think it's interesting, the idea that you could move over to NXT and it not being a demotion. The problem that creates is that the NXT wrestlers make a lot less than the main roster wrestlers. And so something would have to change. It's not like Kevin Owens is going to say, sure, put me in NXT for 6 months and then he either has to take a pay cut or he has to be there and everybody hates him because he's making four times what they're making. So, yeah, that's that. What do you guys think of that question of body types and apparently me going off into main roster and what that means?
Yeah, the money issue
Harley,
is the main
ahead.
Thing
yeah.
that comes
Tom,
to mind.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. well, the money issue is the main thing that comes to mind that you mentioned. So I guess if this were something – and this is a question that we'll return to a lot because it's been a topic for a while, and Triple H has said things like this before, and they seem to – the statement carries more and more weight every time he says they're not developmental. And that's why when people say, oh, EC3 might only be in NXT for a little while, it's like, wait, why? Oh, wait, but really? Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He clearly knows where all the cameras are. It seems to be a unanimous PW Torch opinion that he'll probably translate better on the main roster anyway. So yeah, why not? One solution that I could come up with, totally spitballing, is that if wrestlers were to take time off of the quote-unquote main roster, not only could that help keep them fresh for the wider audience, but maybe they don't appear on NXT TV. Maybe they just do little periods, training periods at the PC. Like they've recently had DDP come in and Lance Storm and so on and so forth. They do that pretty frequently. They could, you know, Kevin Owens could come and work with people for a month or two on whatever it is he works with them on. Just the thought.
Yeah. So, you know what? I already kind of went off. Harley, what did you think of this?
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole body type question, I'm going to focus more on that side of things. And obviously there are exceptions. Someone like Lars Sullivan, 100% Vince's kind of guy. But it's Vince, just his taste seems so finicky and weird in a sense, right? We see if Seth Rollins can be NXT champ and big huge guy on the main roster, then surely Aleister Black can, right? But you never know, because you'd think, looking at Big E, that's a Vince guy, that's world champion, look at the muscles, look at the size of him, and yet he's never risen above the mid card. And you know, you'd think like, oh, the way Asuka dominated NXT, she'd be a shoo-in to be getting the kind of push Ronda Rousey is getting now. And instead, she wasn't on the number two pay-per-view of the year, and she lost on the number one pay-per-view of the year. So, I don't know. It's so hard to predict. Yeah, Vince typically likes tall guys, muscly guys, long hair, and skinny blonde white women. But even within those confines, he'll sometimes make some weird decisions, or somebody will do one wrong thing and then they're dead for life. We've seen that a lot too.
Yeah, he's a roundabout way of saying nobody understands Vince. Nobody's about to.
He's 12 years old. From what I've read.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that. As far as his other bit, also, what is the resident NXT correspondent's take on Mae Young Classic 2? Who stole his heart? Do you have a non-spoilery version of that answer, Tom?
I do. I have a short version and a long version, but I feel like I've been careful enough in concocting it that there will be no spoilers. I will mention before going into this list of names that the person I couldn't stop talking about coming out of last year's Mae Young Classic tapings was Jazzy Gabbert, and she didn't even make it out of the first round. So none of the people that I mentioned shouldn't suggest like how they actually fared in the tournament. So hopefully I succeed in not being spoilery here. For me personally, there, of course, were a handful of performers that I was not previously familiar with. And of those, the three that impressed me most were Maiko Satomura, Karen Q, and Hiroyo Matsumoto. There were some that had not been in the Mae Young Classic or in WWE previously that I actually was familiar with, so they didn't really count in that first category, and those would have been Ariel Monroe, Lacey Lane, and MJ Jenkins. I was absolutely thrilled to see people like Rachel Ellering, Mercedes Martinez, Xia Li, and Mia Yim return. I will say that, in my opinion, Mia Yim had the match of the tournament. That's just my opinion, but I thought that she had the best match of the tapings, I should say. And the short answer, though, which I should have given first, I suppose, was if I were to only pick one, it would be the returning participant, Rhea Ripley. She already had a little bit of my heart from the first Mae Young Classic, and I've been keeping an eye on her, and she's really seems to become one of the people at the PC that they trust. She's since turned heel. She's tagging with Reyna Gonzalez at live events. They're really trusting Reyna and Rhea to work with Casey Catanzaro. Casey Catanzaro seems to be a pet project at the PC, and she has almost exclusively been working with Reyna and Rhea. And when I see somebody paired up like that, it really makes me think that they must think pretty highly of what people like Reyna and Rhea are able to do, and that there must be a lot of trust there. So at the Mae Young Classic 2018, Rhea really took my interest in her to a new level, and I thought that she did some really she took great advantage of the opportunity that was presented to her, and I'm excited for other people to see it, and I'm excited to see what she does in the NXT UK tournament as well.
I'm interested in this as well, because I've heard a lot on social media about how far she's come. She was last year, she was in my bottom two people in the tournament. I absolutely loathed her. I could not stand her in the tournament. And I know that I brought that up in this.
Is it because she reminded you?
It was because she's not good. No, it's because she can't wrestle. No, it was because I absolutely hated her wrestling. It had nothing to do with reminding me of anybody. I thought she was just poor in the first tournament. Very poor. Now I've heard really good, and she didn't have a great, I remember the first match and the second match. I don't remember who she was with, but I remember in the second match where she was with somebody who had been around longer, it was a better match. But I came away thinking it seems like they're high on her, and I can't figure out why. I literally don't see anything here. I mean, I see the one thing, but like she's good looking, but a lot of them are, so who cares? So I'm really interested to see what she does in this tournament, very much so. So and she seems to be well liked, as far as, you know, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, not quite as much as you, because that's impossible. But I'm on Twitter quite a lot. And a lot of wrestlers over the last year have had a lot of very, very nice things to say about Rhea Ripley and how far she's come. And I've been in that position before, where I really didn't like a wrestler on NXT, and they came so far in such a short amount of time. Once somebody's on the main roster, if I don't like them, it's probably not going to turn around, because they're not in a developmental territory. They are who they're going to be. They got there. It doesn't matter. So, but yeah, when they're down in NXT, a lot of change can happen. And she's super young, right? She's like 20 or 21. She's really, really young. So
I think that's right.
So yeah, so I'm definitely interested to see her there. Yeah.
It didn't have the link that I wanted. Yeah, she was born in 96. So if anyone's quicker at math than I am, there you go.
I graduated in 96, so I know how long ago that was. She's 22 if her birthday has passed this year. Wow. Otherwise, she is 21. So yeah, whole life ahead of her, and she was young when she was in the last one. So I'm interested to see that. And you know what? If I like her in it, maybe I'll go back and watch the first and see if I was just in a bad mood, which I normally am. So
I think
there you
you're
go.
Biased just because Jared she's up against Dakota Kai.
Oh, was she?
Yeah,
Dakota
that was.
Guy. But that Dakota
was
Guy beat
round.
Her, so
yeah,
who cares?
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Okay, so hi crew, who do you think might be post SummerSlam call-ups? My bet is EC3 and Shayna. EC3's loss, coupled with his lack of character direction, heel or face, makes me believe he was never meant to stay in NXT long, as he's had prior WWE experience like McIntyre. Shayna will get called up simply because she's ready in the horsewomen versus horsewomen angle at Survivor Series. Love the show, JB from Detroit. I find it really hard to argue with JB on either of these. EC3, I would have said, was a lock before seeing this episode and seeing that maybe he's in for something with Lars. And if he's not in with, you know, maybe he'll do a job to Lars and then he'll move up, which is something we've certainly seen before. But I don't know what there is to keep. For all the reasons that JB says here, I'm on board with the EC3 thing because they haven't really defined who he is. They've just kind of thrown stuff at the wall. And like he said, he's been wrestling a long time. So maybe they just want to make hay and see what they can do with him at that secondary title on the main roster type level. And if it works out, they'll move him even further higher than that. Or maybe it'll just be a Sheamus type thing where they push him all the way to the top and see what happens. I'm not sure that I see that with him. I really don't. But maybe they'll throw him into that secondary title kind of mix. And then Shayna, I agree there as well. I've been saying that for a little bit. And once again, we started hearing that horsewomen idea. And we've started to see them on TV again, which for me, with this much time, 2.5 months before, almost 3 months before Survivor Series, I can easily see that happening. The fact that they're just putting Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir, I think, is that right? Marina Shafir on TV is that this way, even if they're not having their matches yet, they're in front of mind as a unit. So maybe just a subtle way to get that sort of thing started. And that way they can move Shayna out of the way. And Shayna doesn't. What else does she need to prove in NXT? They're really nothing. She lost two matches. They were both fluky. They were both shown to be somewhat fluky. She was out wrestled, but she was never out fought. So maybe move her up. Is there anybody else I'm missing that could be moving up? Harley.
Yeah, Baszler for sure. That's a shoe-in. The only other person that jumped to mind for me was maybe Nikki Cross, prior to her mysteriously standing on a production truck watching Alistair get beat up tonight. Right. But Nikki, because we've been thinking of it for months, and also with the Evolution pay-per-view happening in October, I wouldn't be surprised if a couple more women don't maybe find their way onto the main card. Even if she gets called up to be in a battle royal or something.
Right.
Also, like, Sanity's not doing well on SmackDown. They could really use her.
Yeah, I don't know. Why call them up if that's going to be what you do with them? Like, are they just going to split them and have this be like something where they try to wedge something out of getting them split up? It doesn't seem like there's any kind of plan for them to not even get on TV most of the time. I don't get it. And maybe that's why they don't want to send Nikki up, because they don't want her lost in that shuffle, because I feel like she can be valuable if used the right way. I don't know if she's going to be used the right way. Tom, any other names?
Yeah, you know, the emailer really nailed the ones that I was thinking. And, you know, beyond that, there's just the main roster is so cluttered right now. You know, Harley makes a great point about wanting to stock the ranks a little bit more for Evolution, depending on, I guess, how many veterans they're bringing back, because they keep on hitting that 50 women number when they talk about it. But you mentioned with Sanity, it just seems like these people are going up and there's either no plan for them, or they don't know what to do with them, or it doesn't, like with the Authors of Pain, it seems like there's a plan at first and then it doesn't seem to pan out, and now they're just sort of wrestling Titus Worldwide every single week for what feels like 2 or 3 months now. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see too much right away. Last year, we did get a little bit before Survivor Series. Again, I think just to sort of fill up before the Rumble, because they were having the Women's Rumble and they needed more women for that.
That would have been the time.
Shayna's the only one that I'm putting money on. And honestly, the main reason is because as much as I love Shayna Khairy, you know, as much as I've gushed about that ongoing feud and this match at TakeOver was another incredible one for me, I don't want to see Shayna lose again in NXT. So that's the main reason why I would want her to go up now, so she doesn't have to do this rematch clause thing and then presumably lose to Khairy.
they certainly didn't
happen at Evolution.
Well, you know, that Kyrie's would be got a really good someone. Yeah, and we, you know, you and I have exchanged a couple times how we feel like Kyrie winning made the most sense because going into this Mae Young Classic with the previous Mae Young Classic winner as champion now could speak volumes. So not only would we get the Mae Young Classic finals on Evolution, we'd also get another rematch of last year's. That's a good point. You know, that that is a really good point, because I feel like I agree with the Kelly's earlier sentiment that Bianca Belair probably shouldn't be moved right away into contending for Kyrie's title, because just I don't want to see Bianca lose either. And I feel like Kyrie's got to hold it at least a little bit longer. Not that every champion has to hold it for a long time, but I feel like Kyrie's got to be one of those. So I think somebody like Lacey Evans, who's never been on a takeover and has shown so much growth, could be a good first challenger for Kyrie. But yeah, Evolution takes place before the next takeover, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, I keep kind of forgetting about the timing of it because I don't watch a ton of the main roster shows. If they string together some good ones, I might start trying to pick it up again. I've also been extremely busy of late, so even wedging in this in the wake of the New Japan G1 Climax being over, it's been tough. So, but yeah, that's that email. I've got one more from Brian Alston. Brian from Phoenix, senior PW Torch VIP subscriber. Hello, friends. Unfortunately, not able to watch NXT live, but I do have a question from TakeOver Brooklyn 4, actually the pre-show. Undisputed Era were being interviewed. They were sitting in director's chairs and bar stools. Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong were jointly holding onto a tag team belt. I thought this was funny, but also intriguing. Fish was the original co-holder, but the reign is Strong and Kyle O'Reilly. Is this foreshadowing jealousy in UE's ranks? Thanks, Brian Alston. We've gotten kind of versions of this question before, and I've always said, no, I don't really think so. I don't think they break up Fish and O'Reilly just because that's the team with all the history. And I don't think that Strong gets wedged into that or he feels terrible about being pinched out, because it seems like Strong has really found his bailiwick here and is in a pretty good spot that kind of he doesn't need to talk a lot. Like, he can jump in, but he doesn't have to do the heavy lifting in interviews, which is good for him, because and that's never been what he's good at. He's good at being a pro wrestler. He's never been great on the interview side of things. So I will say, though, that now enough time has passed that I can kind of see this happening. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be a too quick turn yet. And we were talking on I think Saturday about how Fish has been out for a while now, and they're starting to get near the time where he could be back in the ring, and they're still champions. So that kind of brings up that question: what do they do there, and are they going to do the Freebird rule yet again? Because they do the Freebird rule with New Day, which I think is fine, but then they started doing it with Sanity, and I thought, you know, maybe getting kind of a little much there to just make that, like, how long before this is just the rule and you can have any 10 guys in a tag team and then you can just have those two fight that night. I don't know. I feel like you don't make this be a special thing that only one team does. I could see this happening, but I don't know how it happens other than Strong being beaten out of the group. And I don't know if that's a great thing for him, but I think it's more likely than Fish being pinched out of the group, because Fish and O'Reilly, they were hired to be together. They were not hired to be singles wrestlers or separate from one another. They were hired because they're one of the best tag teams in the world. Harley, what do you think?
Yeah, Fish and O'Reilly are the two that you know are going to stay together regardless. So they could do a whole implosion of the Undisputed Era where Fish and O'Reilly go one way, Cole goes another, and Roddy goes a different way. And they kind of all, that's the end of the group, and we're left with a tag team and two singles wrestlers. And you could make Cole a babyface if you wanted. It worked for Shawn Michaels. You can make Roddy a babyface again, probably. But I don't know. I still say that the four of them stick together for the foreseeable future. I don't know how they work out the takeout situation. Maybe they're not even take champions by that time. Maybe War Raiders take the belts and that solves the problem.
That's true. Tom, anything on those guys?
Yeah, part when I think about this, and you know, very recently I would have said, oh, the dissolution of Undisputed Era is not on my mind at all. But as Harley observed on a recent episode of ours, I think that it's kind of reached a point where now I'm starting to think about it a little bit, not as something that's going to happen tomorrow. But the questions that I think of when I think about this are, how do they foresee them going up to the main roster? Are they still Undisputed Era, or do they want Cole as a singles act and Fish and O'Reilly maybe even reintroduced as Red Dragon when they go up to Raw or SmackDown? And then Roddy, who knows? Sadly, I could see him ending up in sort of like an Apollo Crews spot where good in the ring, but, you know, there's not much else going on there. I absolutely agree that, you know, the bellywig term that you used was perfect for his role right now, to the point where I, you know, with whatever was going to happen with him in Undisputed Era, I want it to be the last thing he does in NXT. I don't want him to revert to babyface Roderick Strong, which was just boring as could be. The other thing that I think about, and maybe this is a stretch, but does Undisputed Era become the Bullet Club of NXT, where they bring in new members and other members leave, and it's just sort of a faction that it continues to exist in NXT, and new people come in and new people and other people leave. So at a certain point, it'll still exist, but it won't have any of the current four members in it.
I guess I could kind of be on board with that if they want to do that one by one. In terms of like Roddy's future, I feel like on the main roster, I don't know that there's a lot of room for him to do a whole lot, but maybe he'll get into a decent, like a Drew Gulak type role or a Tony Nese type role where he is, you can count on him for matches always. And you know, they're going to be decent. You don't have to have him do a lot. He may not be in a position to win often, but he'll always be in the mix. So he'll always be a stumbling block for somebody else. I just don't know that he can hold up his end of interviews as far as, yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, I think he's more likely to end up like Cedric Alexander and Hideo Itami than like Apollo Crews.
Yeah, yeah, I think so as well. But if he goes to the main roster, it'll be an Apollo Crews type experience, probably. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that's where he'll go. I think he'll be more of a 205 guy, and who knows what he'll do there. That's Triple H's show too. So maybe he'll do well there. He's obviously got the history with him. So I gotta say, I think that's our show. We covered our emails. We covered the two matches that there were, and we got one match signed for next week. Undisputed Era versus Ricochet and Pete Dunne. I'm super psyched about that because it'll be awesome. I assume the established team goes over and that'll get our Ricochet Pete Dunne thing started. It's, you know, it's wrestling 101 and it's a little obvious, but we know it's going to be good in the ring. So who cares? But Tom, we'll be seeing it what, tomorrow night? Is that right?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. So Tom will be there. He'll hit you with a spoiler. If you want to read a spoiler of all the tapings, you can read his on the Torch. I am Kelly Wells at Spooky Milk. You can find me. And Harley, who are you?
I'm on Twitter at Talking Honor. And barring any unforeseen circumstances, the first episode of the new Mae Young podcast will be out Tuesday for your listening. Myself, Bridget, and Kat will be introducing you to all 32 women in the tournament and making our very early predictions on who might go to the Final Four.
Ooh, that sounds fun. Tom.
And I am at Tom Staup.
Okay. That is our show, folks. And we thank you for listening. And we'll hear you in 7. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.